I'm fine. It's okay.
I'm just going to record us now so I make sure that I get this.
You're
good. Don't worry about it. It's fine. I'll cut all this shit off. I want to make sure that
I get time. It's all four of us now. Now I was out doing something and I got to get the fucking headphones on. How am I going to put the headphones over my hat? I don't know. I got to get the hat off. It's all bullshit now. I don't need this shit, man.
It's all bullshit now. Scrap it.
Science, art, it means nothing now. I was told magic and science were all the same.
These cords and robes are a sham now.
Magic and science are one and the same. How many times have we heard that in the last decade?
Okay. Hi.
Hello.
Hey, listen, you know what? Let's start from right here. Hey, we're talking shit today. I don't know what kind of shit we're talking, but it's gonna be like very good shit, very powerful, Vice, intelligent shit.
Vice,
this is actually for everyone, by the way.
Vice, relax. I'm gonna do a proper intro. Get your headset on. And we're good.
All right, you get right. Whatever you need.
Don't worry, you're good.
Okay.
Take a deep breath. USA, my friend. You're good.
USA.
Not salsa, not flamenco, my brother. Do you know? Natu?
What is Natu? Polam gattu dummulo na potla gitta dookinattu pole ramma jataralo pota raju ginattu kirru seppulesukoni karra saamu chesinattu marri sattu neelalona kurra gumpu koodinattu erra jonna rottelona milapa tokku garibinattu na paata chudu na paata chudu naattu 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 veela naattu 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 pura naattu
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this week's episode of Action for Everyone, aka Masters and Meatheads, where for this here, whatever day it is, like, folks, look, I'm sorry, it's been a bit of a shit show before we even started recording already, but we are here. It is May 22nd, 2022. I am, as always, your host, Mike Scott. I am joined by the always spicy hot take thrown out, Liam O'Donnell. Liam, how are you?
I'm doing great. Excited to be here with you guys. And we have a special guest with us today. It's our first time returning guest, right?
Ah, yeah.
Yeah. Jordan Cruciola. Did I say the last name correctly?
You did. Cruciola. That is correct.
Of the fantastic Disaster Girls podcast, mm-hmm. One of my favorites, and literally 10 others, which you can, she'll tell us all about. But we're super excited to have her here. And Jordan, how are you doing?
I am doing fantastic. So happy to be back. So happy to be asked. And so honored to be in the presence of such fantastic recent achievements by this podcast, by the denizens of this podcast.
Yep, that's right. Because first and foremost, we got to give it up for the other member of the pod, Vice Victus, Masters of Science.
Woo, 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 woo.
How you doing, buddy?
Nice.
Wingardium Leviosa. That's you gotta say that during the diploma ceremony.
He became,
make sure you know the science.
He became Hermione Granger when he graduated.
Yeah, that shit is wild, man. Like, have you ever actually looked closely at the graduation accoutrement? It's like a fucking maid shit. Like, yeah. it's like an actual wizard robe. Because like the doctor would have they had
when they have the fluffy felt.
Yeah,
hats. Yeah.
We had one guy. He was giving out the diplomas. He had like a I don't know. It was like a super yarmulke. It was so cool. I wish I had one of those. It was like a high yarmulke. It was dope. Yeah. And then like they have like each wizard cast has its own like color system. And then in the arts and science. Oh, so by the way, hi guys. Yeah. So I got my master's degree from Fordham University School of Graduate Arts and Sciences, master's in cybersecurity. Thank you very much.
Hey.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. So with the graduate arts and science, the logo mascot is an owl. So I'm
great.
This is a fucking Hufflepuff fast school going on. Like, I didn't realize this whole time I was there with these animal mascots, these familiars or whatever the fuck. Yeah, it's like wizard school, wizard
That's
ceremony.
That's fully Hogwarts. That is fully Hogwarts. Yes.
And plus the fact that because Fordham here in New York City, Fordham University is a pretty old prestigious institution, started 1840, whatever. They're a Jesuit school run by Catholic diocese, whatever. So the ceremony was in a church that was built in 1847, a national landmark, and it has like this old ass those old red like Pope top hat things. I don't even,
like the cardinal stuff.
Like hanging from the rafters, like it's a jersey. But like, I'm like, what the fuck is happening right now?
Are they retired? Like, the retired garments?
I would hope so.
Hall of Fame.
Oh, like maybe like when you throw the hat after the ceremony, whoever hits the hat with their hat gets a new hat. They then become the Pope. They become the it's a doctorate.
Like the sneakers on a power line. You know, you're just gonna whip them up there.
The Jesuit equivalent of.
Yeah, so yeah, I'm a master of science, whatever the fuck that means.
Congratulations. That is fantastic news. What a goddamn accomplishment.
Yeah, yeah, it was so cool. Because then afterwards, we went to, Fordham University is in the Bronx, and near there is Little Italy, Arthur Avenue. Of course, went there, got my celebratory pasta dish. It was so cool. Then went to Long Island to do a hot wing festival. It's a great day all around, just living it up. Yeah.
Living it up.
Yeah, yeah, you know, there's those times, like especially right now, where I do get jealous of people that live in New York, because it's like the experience of May and like everything all of this winter, like you're coming out of something, and it's just
experience of May in New York though exists because of the experience of the preceding six.
Exactly. Like,
it doesn't come for fucking free.
You earn that. You earn it. Yeah. No, I mean, it was in Boston. It was just like, everyone's like, you're taking these layers off and you're like, I haven't seen this person in 6 months. Who is that person? And
a friend of mine talking once about how like, I saw shoulders for the first time today since October. It was like, Jesus Christ, Rachel.
Yeah. Yeah.
But everybody's congratulating Vice for his master's, and that's great. You know, good job, Vice. I'm more congratulating you for the pocket cheeseburgers that you.
Oh, man.
because you have a man's pockets.
Lots of people have master's degrees. I've never seen anybody take fucking cargo pant burgers to a movie before, buddy.
That was my thesis statement. Yeah. we'll get to this later on about the movie.
Science
and
magic.
So I had this. I'll do this first. I have this kind of phrase I kind of sort of coined. I call them like hamburger movies. So like,
yeah,
everybody knows the phrase popcorn movies. It's like, you know, oh, I'm going to see a fun, Turn Off Your Brain kind of movie. And like, I kind of don't like those because like popcorn makes you feel like queasy and empty. So I kind of hate that psychosomatic linking of those two, this movie and the term. But whenever I eat a hamburger, I actually feel good. It's filling. If you feel alive. And also, but like,
I hear that.
When I eat a hamburger during a good movie, that's like, it's not, you know, it's not a refined, you know, high end artisan film.
Yeah.
But it's quality. It's good for you. It's good for your soul, your body, your mind. Like, you know, perfect example, you know, Mad Max, Fury Road, hamburger ass movie.
With that's fries a very and a good coke, point.
You know, like, so like, it's like a, like, Tony Scott makes foot long, thick ass hot dog movies, you know, like a hot dog hamburger, but like, it's a sensation that's like both in your gut. And then your mind too. So yeah, so like I'll get to later on. I did see a very nice hamburger film this week we can talk about. Oh, but yo, but before all that, I also want to say, as Mike kind of referred to, it's not only my celebration. We might not get into it a little bit, you know, just general good news.
Yeah, recently. general good news.
Yeah, from our friend Liam, regarding some hopefully coming soon, upcoming projects going on.
Wow.
No, that was cool this week. The Frank Grillo starring movie Merciless was announced at Cannes. It's a little similar to what we were talking about last week with Skyline Radio, where you know, they do these announcements at Cannes, and then it means that they're pre-selling foreign to hopefully get within a threshold, but then you can start financing the movie. So it's a really exciting step. And obviously with Frank, he's kind of like on a crazy roll right now, doing a lot of movies. And this was a script that I didn't write it. It was written by another Frank. It's a lot of Frank energy in this.
There is. It's so Frank. It's so many Franks.
100% be Frank energy, aren't they?
Yeah.
His name is Frank Hanna. He wrote a movie called The Cooler that Wayne Kramer directed with Alec Baldwin and William H. Macy and blanking on the actress's name.
Maria Bello. Great.
Yes.
Maria Bello. Great fucking movie. Great fun.
Yeah. So, you know, he's a bit of a wild man. And it's definitely the darkest and most fucked up script that anyone's brought to me and said, like, do you want to make this? usually I'm on the other end. Like, can we go R-rated? Can we do this? To have producers kind of come to you with the something this edgy was definitely cool. And so we'll see. It's all these things with the schedules and everything. It's up in the air. And also last night I did do a little thread about Film Fest because a different project.
Very nice.
Oh, thank you. There's another project that came and you know, just like the Merciless, that project, it's Sentient. The head of Sentient or the people that run Sentient are Pierre Morel from directed Taken. And then Christopher Tuffin and his wife, Renee Tabb. And so Christopher Tuffin was my manager earlier before he kind of went off to do this venture. So I've known him since Beyond Skyline. So that was just kind of like, it came like kind of a full circle sort of thing, like, you know, based on relationships. But this other opportunity that's come that hasn't been announced yet, I just like to do like little things where I will sit down and think about how we got there.
Yeah.
And I went back, oh my God, Crom, please, Crom, you're killing the podcast.
Enough, Crom.
Yeah, I can't concentrate. Just babies screaming, dogs barking. Anyway, in the thread,
the life of a glamorous Hollywood filmmaker.
Yeah, I was just kind of talking about how all the I did a panel for Lesley University, and all the kids were like, "How do I get my short into the film fest, and what is that going to mean?" And I was kind of like, "Well, like, you know, chances are like the short is not really what you're selling. You're selling yourself. I mean, yeah. That's really the product." Mm-hmm. And people think like, oh, it's this movie, it's this script, it's this short, and it's really your career. And it's like, so the thing that is important about those festivals is making those connections with people kind of at the same level as you.
Yeah.
And that requires sometimes more engagement. I'm kind of an intro extrovert. It just depends where I'm at. And the first times that it was screening, I was so nervous that I couldn't really engage with everybody else. I was just kind of like drinking beer in the back row, like, please don't everybody like boo my movie, you know? So by the end of it, I felt like I was much more comfortable and got a hang. And it was literally in the last screening in my hometown of Boston that I met this guy, Jeff Hammer, who was and it goes into this in the thread, but just basically, being able to relax and engage with the other people there that have their films there is actually the main purpose, I think, of it. And chances are, you know, some people do get lucky. There's those crazy stories that, you know, some influential person is going to watch your short or watch your movie and you'll get that. I'm not saying that doesn't happen, but I think I generally try to give advice towards like what the likely thing is.
Yeah.
And give advice for like mediocre people like myself. Like if you're exceptionally talented, you don't need my advice. You're going to get noticed and you're going to sparkle and you're going to shine. But if you're like someone who's like marginally talented, but you want to work hard, like that's who the people I try to talk to. It's like when I saw,
it's speaking to aspects that people can control and not the things that could pop out of nowhere and be the awesome outlier thing that absolutely does exist, but isn't within your scope of influence. It's like, again, the work you make, but these are things that you're speaking to. That's like, here's how you can self-generate in a way in these new or daunting situations.
Yeah. Like what's that podcast series or that it's, I actually have the subscription where it's like the really smart people's chats. I went to Ron Howard's.
Oh, like Masterclass?
Yeah. I went to Ron Howard's before everyone else's because Ron Howard's like, he's like a baseline, right? Like he's talented, but he kind of knows he's not, you know, like Martin Scorsese.
He's doing Spielberg, but knows he isn't Spielberg.
Exactly. And he's very aware about it. And yeah. So he kind of just talked about it in a way that I found his more helpful than most other people's, because he's kind of coming at it from a place of humility. And that's what I try to do too. But anyway, so that was fun. And I also was trying to get ahead of the inevitable backlash when a third project gets announced and people are just gonna be like, wait a minute, this guy's not that fucking good. Why is he getting all this attention right now? So please, I'm aware.
When it rains, it pours.
I'm aware. Yeah, I'm aware. I know. I'm lucky right now. And
but I was going to say, humility in your filmmaking and no humility in any other aspect of your life.
I support it.
Well, what should I be humble for? I've got a hot wife. I've got 4 great kids. What do you want me to say?
Yeah. Fuck your shit. That's right. Yes. Let people know.
Well, I think a key thing that what you just said too is the find people who are sort of in your peer group. Find people who are at your level, at your sort of like place in their career, because shoot your shot, of course, with people who are a bit of a punch up, and, you know, hopefully you can reach that hand up and somebody can reach back down and pull you back up with them. But also this really sustainable connections where you feel like you're not chasing a, did you get my last email? People are the ones who are at your status level. Like you're the ones who, if you find the right folks, you will work with one another to bring each other up. And it's not gonna be an imbalance of power where you are hoping someone more fancy than you can do something for you and you expend excess resources on trying to get them to, as opposed to working with people who you are at a more eye to eye level with. And I think that's a really, really important thing about this industry that, you know, you want your first feature to end up in the hands of Toni Collette and to become fucking Hereditary, but yeah, you also can be Fran Kranz just like making shit with the friends you've made along the way and have say in your career making the things that you want to make. So,
you know, I found this is like a advice for all industries. I'm learning this as I go, because, you know, just like, you know, I mentioned the whole like cybersecurity thing, like all of my peers, we come from vastly different backgrounds, like demographic, age-wise, career-wise, even. But basically, we are the talent pool. So it's not like us trying to, like, you know, kiss ass as executives, whatever. Like,
totally,
we are becoming and will be and continue to be what drives the industry, drives the force, to get the boost from the ground. So it behooves all of us to not just be friends, network, but also like stay abreast of each other's goings on. So the
you bring each other with each other.
Yeah, because we're gonna be there, but like we're all in the same pool. It's not a race. It's this hive, you know, or this whole large collective, really.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that has been the kind of fun thing about, I guess, aging into through your 30s and now being 40. Was like, I was always kind of the young guy at those companies and always kind of reaching up, clawing up. And then it was fun to start to see like, oh, there's more people coming in and they're like kind of mine, and then reaching back. And like, you know, the guy that I edit with and does all of my sizzle reels is, you know, Chad, and he's, you know, in early 30s. And it's like, way more talented at editing than I'll ever be. You know, that's the other advice to the young filmmakers, like get good at editing and get good at Photoshop so you don't have to pay people to do it like a dinosaur like me. But yeah, anyway, that was the little film aspiring filmmaker advice standpoint. And then but yeah, thanks everybody for the merciless switches, and let's you know, hopefully get one of these made instead of just winning a PR. The PR war is fantastic, but
yeah, you had a great PR triumph.
Yeah, what's really great is actually getting paid to work. That's
like it's like getting a degree, or like but then not having a job.
Exactly. Like, oh, look at all these press releases I've had over the years. Fantastic. Yeah. They're on my wall. Look at that. Hollywood Reporter.
You know. Very highly of
me. Yeah, I'll bring it into Bank of America, see if they can bond my press release.
Take that out to talent.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. The one other thing coming out of Con that I do just want to quickly shout out, and I'm going to be adjusting what we're talking about on the fly because I know Liam has a heart out, so I want to try and make sure that we move. But I do want to just shout out friends of the show, Chad Law, William Kaufman, and Scott Adkins announced Violence of Action coming out with...
What a title.
This is actually one that's been in the works for years. I mean, even before I met Scott, I was asking about this one because it was originally called Vigilante. But it's now starring, also co-starring Cam, as Liam calls him, Gigadet.
Cam Gigante?
I call it Gigante.
And I did just have an amusing...
Every millennial girl knows Cam Gigante.
I did text Scott and say, hey, you're collecting Twilight stars like they're fucking Pokemon, man. Because he's been in a movie with Kellan Lutz. He's been in a movie with Ashley Green. Now he's got Cam.
Loved Ashley Green.
He just needs R-Pats and K-Stew, and he'll have the full set. But Chad Law is an amazingly prolific and amazingly incredible screenwriter, and anytime one of his movies takes off, I get very happy, and I know he is a fan of the show, so he's probably listening. So we love you, Chad. Yeah. More power to you, man.
I've talked to Chad. He's going to come on, so we'll have him on when he has something to promote, which is probably like going to be every 2 months for the next year. So
I was gonna say, it sounds like that comes around often then.
Yeah. I think he's on movie number 4 within the past year. It's crazy.
All of his press releases turned into movies, apparently.
Yeah. He's got a much better track record than I do.
Jesus.
He's coming for some of those Gigante abs. Yeah, man.
Yeah. On, yeah. That is right.
Yeah. How old is he now? Is he almost in his 40s still, or is he? He's younger than we think.
He's got to be late. He's late 30s, early 40s.
Okay.
Mid 40s, maybe, because he was an adult when I was still wow, Cam Gigante.
It's the perfect striations and the 8-pack.
Oh, God. Oh, God. He is 39. Cam Gigante is 39 years old. 39 and eternal.
My
a vampire that he is.
Can't wait.
All right, so I'm cutting something out, and we're moving on immediately to the One Punch Master.
There he is.
Oh yeah,
see this week.
Oh okay, yeah. So today we're gonna talk quickly about the Roundup, aka The Outlaws 2, starring the Korean beef himself, Ma Dong Seok, aka Don Lee. He goes by both names. Mm-hmm. He's been in America for a while. Oh, okay, so was anybody else able to see it besides myself? Or who?
No, I couldn't find any showtimes around here, and I don't think it's on demand yet.
Yeah. So, I saw it. So this is the part where they cheeseburgers. So yeah.
Yeah, the cheeseburger, the cheeseburger film.
Yeah. So I said, I thought to myself, if I'm going to see Don Lee punch people into a coma, I got to have some burgers with this. So I brought my two burgers. I put two Bubba burgers in my air fryer, wrapped them up in tinfoil. Put it in my cargo shorts, my favorite pair.
My favorite pair.
I have several. I have a whole set.
I believe it.
I took my ass to the Bay Terrace AMC here in New York City, which is in Bayside, which is a pretty large Korean American enclave.
Got it.
Yeah, because and so as such, they're one of the locations that have mostly that usually have the day and day release of Korean films.
Resource. So,
yeah. So. Oh yeah, so now the thing is, I this is kind of admitting my sins. I haven't seen The Outlaws yet, so so The Roundup is a sequel to The Outlaws, of course.
Is really good. Like Gangster Cop and The Devil, I love, and it gets like a lot of talk. But when I watched The Outlaws, I was like, why aren't we talking about this like 1-to-1 alongside Gangster Cop and The Devil?
Wait, so hey, okay, so let's do this. Can you give a rundown of what The Outlaws kind of entails, and then I'll go right into the.
It's a real, I mean, it's Beast Cop. It's Beast Cop who operates obviously extrajudicially a fair amount of the time. is trying to, there is a new crime power player in town who is ruthless beyond measure, and so is consolidating the power of like multiple crime factions under him by basically like violencing them into submission and making himself the kingpin of power. And so of course Ma Dong-seok has to stop him, and it has a great final showdown, many showdowns, and it is I believe that is the movie that gives you the gif of Ma Dong-seok slapping a man into unconsciousness. Not punching, but open hand slapping a man into unconsciousness.
This is a big fucking meat frying pan meat pan. Oh, it's great.
Yeah, cast iron 12 inch hand.
Right, yeah. So the roundup takes place so we have the same crew, the same Detective Ma and his captain and his same squad of detectives. They catch wind of a very violent criminal who extorts and kidnaps and murders Korean tourists who are in Vietnam, you know, relatively close area. So they go to apprehend one criminal from Vietnam, like by the consulate, kind of a prisoner exchange kind of thing. And then they find out there's an even bigger bad threat in the area. And so I think about at least a third to a half of the movie is actually, I'll try to avoid spoilers. Just generally speaking, though, it does take place in Korea and Vietnam throughout the movie. So they do in Vietnam, and they encounter the various ruffians and goons of Ho Chi Minh City, but also a slighter co-conspiracy thing going on with who's actually behind stuff. Mm. But behind it all, as you will see in the ads and trailers, the main villain this time is a famous star himself, Sokwoo Sun. He's like if Detective Ma is like a beefy bully,
yes.
The villain this time is a mad butcher, which is it's a perfect foil, you know, because he stabs and chops and maims people to death.
He stabs, he chops, he maims.
Yeah, he slices, slices. So from the get go, his threat presence is very real. So it's a good setup, because of course Detective Ma is like. Indomitable. He's a juggernaut.
Yes. Yeah,
so that's part of the fun of seeing both these movies and also just Ma Dong-seok in general. Is like he steamrolls through all of his movie opponents. Because you know he's kind of a very distinct size about him. He's not just big. He's like I don't think he's that tall even. He's maybe at most 5'10" if that all. You know. Uh-huh. So it's almost similar to like Mike Tyson in that. What was special about Mike Tyson back in the day was that most heavyweights were, you know, 6 feet tall and upwards. Mike Tyson being 5'10", 10-ish, he was relatively shorter than most of his opponents, but that his build plus that, I would say, perfect quote-unquote height made him that much more dangerous to get through openings and through defenses and right to the actual power, all the torque behind his mass and his, you know, speed. So that's what Ma Dong-seok brings to the table as an action hero. He has this like wide torso body, so he just like cranks it. He cranks his barrel just around. He punches. He uses his whole body to punch people like through things. It is a sight to see. It's poetry. It's magic to see him punch people, punch goons through objects.
It's truly spectacular. It is truly spectacular. Yeah. You see that guy on screen. And you're like, you are Gilgamesh. Like,
yeah,
of course you are. Like, Angelina Jolie is Athena and you are Gilgamesh and everyone else here is playing dress up in a costume. And there is just something so like, you know, I think very much the world at large was introduced to Seok in Train to Busan, where he was punching through aisles of trains and was the lovable giant that we all came to be so endeared to so quickly. And there is such The Rock does... The Rock has that thing too. He likes to be like the heart and soul kind of guy, in addition to being the size of a mountain. Like that's very clearly important. But like there is a vulnerability that is constantly present just in those kind of like sad man eyes of Ma Dong-seok that makes it so much less. It feels like it doesn't feel like he's performing the role of like reluctant One Punch King. It's like he is the role of reluctant One Punch King.
But also, there's layers to him as well, because like he's also hilarious. Like,
he's hilarious.
He has several comedies on his butt as well. Like they're actually comedies. Like The Outlaws slash Roundup is action comedies per se. but he has also straight up comedies, straight up dramas.
Like Brothers, I think, is one of them. I think he can stream that on Netflix. Yeah, like he does, where he plays like the oafish brother. Like he's legitimately good comic timing.
Yeah, he's both a talent, you know, and with this incredible physical presence. You know, this is like, you know, people, I always say, you know, there's no more movie stars nowadays, whatever. And he was like, you know, I mean, I don't really want to wait into that stupid ass fucking argument, because I don't know. I kind of started to believe it to myself, because like, I got in mad trouble. Oh, I don't know if you know the Jordan, but like last time, I think it was a few weeks ago, I got in mad shit because I said, Anya Taylor Joy is like,
Swag. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like, and I love Anya Taylor Joy. I don't need you to like Anya Taylor Joy. Like, for some reason, there is an exceptional quality about her live white womanness that I find to be exceptional. You don't have to, there doesn't have to be that quality for you in her white womanness. It can just be that same thing. Yeah. That's fine.
So, yeah. So, you know, so I ain't shit, right? So I was saying, but but like, you know, people like the movie stars.
His words, not mine. I'm fine.
So to me, it's like people are so desperate for movie stars, stardom, mm-hmm. that don't anybody. But like,
she's not a movie star, I will say. Like, she's a movie star, but not in the sense of, like, in the way that there are no movie stars anymore. Right, she's not, like, the case for why there are.
Yeah. And so the whole thing is, like, you know, they are out here, but we just, like, we're only not, I think the general populace, or the general American populace at large, is only now, in the recent years, figuring out that they're all over the world. You mm-hmm. gotta, like, find them more. One recent case this weekend that we're getting into more with your two South Indian stars, that they, you know, is a good example of this. But yeah, like, you know, like people seeing modern soccer, people seeing, you know, Iko Uwais, you know, they're out here. We just like have to kind of open our horizons to it. And they have all the qualities that we hope for, is that but not just what we hope for, but things we haven't seen before. Again, you know, back to Ma's specific peculiar presence, physical, yes. And you know, it's like, it's so amazing. Oh, and I was gonna say, like, I at some point all the action Twitter scholars will have to get together and figure this out. So in the Outlaws, in the Roundup specifically, and I think in his previous films in general, there is a very specific and very distinct sound effect used for Ma Dong Suk's punches. Like I it's hard to explain this. You know, I'm a regular, I don't know if you can hear this with the mic, you know, a regular punch might, you know.
Yeah.
But then it's like I guess a Ma Dong Suk punch is like, I can't even, it's like, you know, it sounds like God slamming a car door.
The famous, the Indiana Jones punch, I think it was, they took a baseball bat into a leather jacket. And so that's why
a big
wallop every time because he's not like the greatest fighter, but when he lands that right cross, it's just like, whoop. Yeah,
it is. It has that res. Yeah, like that. There's as much of a thud as there is to a crack to it.
Yes.
And I did a number of stories about Foley artistry when I worked at Vulture, and one of them was talking to a Foley artist in the Warner Brothers shop for the DC films, and he was explaining, I was asking what, like, the most challenging effects he had ever done were, and he was talking about like how probably, he said the physically most intensive one was actually Justice League. He said that actually was like difficult, like painful for his body, the way he was having to like work and manipulate heavy things. But like there are, In the Disney like Foley shop, there is like a big container with the specific piece of metal in it that is Mjolnir. In the Warner Brothers shop, there is a specific piece of metal that is the sound of like Wonder Woman's sword. Like they have these. So I love to believe that there is somewhere, just every Foley artist in South Korea has access to the same shop. And they're like, okay, here's the barrel where we keep Ma Dong Seok's physical sounds. And you only use this when generating Foley effects for impact for him. You have to use this. No matter the movie, no matter the studio, you use this one thing.
It's the same dry side of beef ribs. And the same lead pipe slapping each other, just, like, because, you know, it sounds similar to when Rocky Balboa Part 6, when he's old now and he has to fight Mason DeLon,
Mason DeLon Dixon.
Yeah, and so he has to build his hurt bombs. So you know, so his whole training mantra in that film is to dig deep. And so it's they have the callback to the punching of the beef in the first movie, but they have a specific, when he fights Dixon and he starts slamming him in the side, in the ribs, to bruise him, to break them, it's a very, it's like a wet thud. It's like a it's like the nerve endings are being dismantled. Hard, loud
just
thud.
Popped over and over again.
And so that was the closest thing I heard, I think, in a while, or that I could recall, to what it sounds like when Monarch Sock punches the bad guys in this film. It's like there's some internal bleeding going on, like with right. one hit. You know? Yeah. It's just so you're like, are you okay? Oh my god!
Yeah.
And this actually goes to what's similar to what Liam said about the, you know, hooking up your actors. There's several movies that are kind of play off of how it's almost comical, how unstoppable Modern Unstoppable is. As a matter of fact, there's a previous film, it was called Unstoppable, where the kind of the joke is, well, it's like he's a former gangster or whatever.
Yeah.
He's a wife guy in a movie.
Yeah.
His wife is kidnapped. So of course now he has to go back to his old ways. So everybody knows that, like, don't fuck with this guy at all. So the movie is, of course, people gotta fuck with him, and he punches him through drawers and chests and objects. And they cannot stop him. Hence the title.
Yeah.
But in certain films, I heard this before. Something that messed up. It was like, you know, you got to make your heroes vulnerable. You got to make them bleed or hurt to make the action, you know, winnable. Like, that's not true at all. Like, you know, Wesley Snipes rarely ever got hurt. Jet Li rarely ever got injured in movies, because they move so well, because they have such a distinct action presence. They don't need to get hurt to be, you know, like Blade in his films really gets, you know, taken over. So
he does get crucified, but
yeah. That's how you know it's a time. She got real. With Bono, so, like, you don't need to have him. Well, he does have in several movies. There are like occasions where it's just getting real. He's like a guy bigger than him, like, who has a fight. Yeah. Which is actually the climax of Unstoppable. He's like a 5'10" Korean. He's like a 6'7" Korean dude. Like, he has to fight him. He has to drag his skull through a ceiling to defeat him.
That's how you know. That's right.
But, you know, but
yeah,
like,
it's,
you know,
fantastic.
Yeah, but like, the part of the fun is, like, you know, like, you don't have to like have him be hurt. You can just revel in the fact that he's unstoppable. He's a punching machine, and just enjoy him fully clobbering dudes left and right, and knowing he's gonna win. But like, you don't need that. You don't have to have a threat of loss, necessarily speaking.
No, I agree. It's especially what you're saying of like half, like requirement, because that actually, without like jumping forward, but that there's a little bit of that in RRR that I was thinking about, but on the other side, because I've gotten to conversations with people where they say like villains need arcs, and I actually don't think that's true at all.
I think a movie can do that and it's fine, or a movie cannot and it's fine.
That speaks to
the Roundup, the villain here, the Mad Butcher. He has no real like ethos. He's just like psychotic, volatile, madman.
Yeah, it's the same thing in First Outlaws. Just like, he's just fucking evil.
Yeah, that's all you need.
And he's really charismatic, and he's cool, and he's pretty hot. So it's just like, oh, this is great. This is all working.
And same thing with Detective Ma. He's like, well, at least I'm not sure in the first one, but he's like a altruistic, you know, as he's his own sense of justice, yes. even though he's very clearly breaking several violations.
So yes, absolutely. a mercenary, like, black site operator operating within the police.
Yeah, I should make emphasize this for people listening. You know, like ACAB, but you know, also like. He's fucking a great, it's very clear that what he's doing in the films is wrong. Like, this is not police procedures. It's not just he's having fun torturing goons.
Yes, he is.
So that's what I'm like, just know that going in, like, you know, like, and I'm not, I wouldn't say that's a Korean thing specifically. I think it's more of a Modern Stock thing, because I have seen several other, Korean police films that are more of the action comedy realm. Uh-huh. You know, they play similar to ours. You know, like, the cops are, you know, cops are good, generally good. So like, they have their films that, just like ours, that do get into the actual corruption and hypocrisy of the law. So they're not unaware about this stuff. You know, they're just as aware of this stuff as we are. But, you know, that's not what this is trying to do.
Yeah, that's not what this is here for.
It's all about seeing him punch dudes through ceilings. That's all. I would say, if you can, I think it's a limited US release now in theaters now, but yeah, if you can, highly recommend seeing the Roundup, aka The Outlaws 2. And of course, if you depending on which streaming service it is, or if you have a DVD or Blu-ray, whatever, The Outlaw itself is highly recommended. Yes.
If I'm, and I didn't look it up, but if I'm not mistaken, I believe The Outlaws is on Hiya.
I think so. I think I did see that included with my Hiya subscription. Yeah.
And so I'm guessing the roundup will also be, I don't know if it's a well ago movie or not, but.
It's kind of like, might as well be.
Yeah. It definitely is in well ago's wheelhouse. Well, go give us money, which actually does lead me to one thing I do want to talk about.
Well, go give Liam 9 movies.
Our
tech avail.
Call for quote.
Very quickly, last week, some people, especially in particular our friend of the show, Ryan Dean, noticed that there was a bit of an irony as we were shitting on Rupert, or like telling Rupert Murdoch to go fuck himself while we were singing the praises of Tubi, which is owned by Rupert Murdoch. That was not lost on us. The one thing
it was lost on me. I will say I was completely ignorant to that. I do not, usually Google who owns every company that I use. So shame on me.
Into the good place.
Yeah.
The one thing I will say is every streaming service is owned by fucking reprehensible people. And so we will never actually be able to talk about a streaming service if we're not going, So, yes, when you watch Tubi, you are putting money in Rupert Murdoch's pocket. If you're
right. Add money. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
If you're watching Amazon Prime, you're putting money in Jeff Bezos's pocket. If you're watching Netflix, you're putting money in
Netflix's pocket,
money launderers' pockets. Not.
I want to excuse myself from every comment made for the past 30 seconds.
No, I don't want to bring us down. It's funny that we talk about this. Cause, I do take this very seriously. Not the movie thing, but if you support me and you support me graduating, then you supported. No, I'm not going to say it. I'm going to say this shit. If you support my master's degree, you support the war on terror. your taxes paid for my college.
Oh, my God.
Your taxes paid for my survival for the 15, 20 plus years hence.
Yes.
I think about this all the fucking time, believe me. So I kind of take it to heart. I strongly empathize with people's grudges or unwillingness to try to support things that they morally cannot support.
Mm-hmm.
But like we're saying, this is the cage we're stuck in for now. The cage of capitalism, the cage of the industry, where there's very few options available to us that don't have some links to some morally reprehensible stuff.
There is no ethical consumption under capitalism.
Right.
There's no ethical consumption in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
that because there's definitely we were talking a little bit about that, about this whole Depp and Amber Heard thing. And I don't really want to get too into it, but I was just thinking about hearing some of the the behavior of fame and thinking about people. It's like, I don't know, pretty much every movie that was made before 1950, that guy probably hit his kids.
Yeah.
And threw scotch at against the wall and stuff.
Your fave 70s auteur was absolutely doing bad shit with lewds. Were.
Just getting a little insight into extreme fame and extreme enabling, and just being anyone in a movie previous to a certain date.
Yeah, just talk to your parents all the bad grandparents words, about how their parents around. Knocked them around. Those were the people making the movies.
Yeah, yeah. So not that that excuses behavior, but it's just a little bit of context because you'll get certain things that it's well, how can you enjoy this and how can you enjoy that? Obviously I was talking about the Pirates movie and I was aware of the bad timing. But it's kind of I don't know. I like a lot of movies that I think are probably questionable as well. And you got to make those decisions yourself. I get it. Anyway, I really don't want to talk about that on the podcast.
No. And one thing, going back to the Tubi thing, the one thing I will say is I do appreciate Ryan bringing it up because it is something, we are a podcast. We have tried to position ourselves as an inclusive, open-minded podcast. And it's one thing to be like, what are you going to do? You got to watch Tubi. But it is something that we probably should have mentioned last week. So that's why we wanted to bring it up this week, is just to be like, hey, I think Tubi's a great fucking streaming service.
I do too.
It is owned by shitty people. So yes, you can make the decision whether you want to support it or not. That is entirely up to you. And that is what we should have said. That is what we should have brought up.
I mean, it was like Fox Studios for, you know, they sold it now to Disney, but obviously, like, you know, Murdoch owned them when they were making these, you know, Alien and Predator movies that we all love. So, I mean, you, the X-Men, all of that shit. So, you know, you've done it before. You'll do it again.
You'll do it again.
And like, on the same token, you know, we want to always encourage your individual right to how you express these feelings, how you want to use support. If you're asking us individually, personally, how we feel, like, if you're saying, do you think Vice is a bad guy because he supports Tubi? Fuck it, I guess I am. No, because, like, I'm a fucking baby killer. Like, I've talked about this a whole bunch of times on Twitter and stuff. Like, I have plenty of sins to atone for, which probably never will be. So, like, don't come to us asking for everyone, like, you know, well, these guys are bad because they fucking watch Tubi to support Murdoch. Man, you know how much fucking blood I got on my fucking hands, for real?
You're like,
man,
I'm not bad because I watch Tubi, but you want to know something?
Yeah, like, I'm laughing, but like we always will take people seriously, all your moral reservations. Mm. Don't come at us like to like try to like hang us out to dry, because you have no idea, man. Like, just like we are grown ass people. Don't come to us with your fucking like little like college level fucking moral ethics course. Because hey, I took ethics too. I passed ethics with A+. Don't fuck with me.
Yeah, I'm a master of science.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, you know, I'm saying, like again, we want to take this seriously, and we want to keep talking. We want to keep talking about this, have this conversation going, because, you know, it's just, again, part of our ethos, the act for everyone. We want all these points of view to be expressed, and we can mull over. But don't use it as a fucking like as ammo against us or against anybody. So, like, to like condemn or whatever. Like, that's not what movies or art is about. It's not a fucking weapon to be cudgel to be wielded against people. It's, you know, it's just an expression of our humanity. So treat it as such, not as a fucking
treat it as such.
And I do want to be clear, Ryan that brought this up to us was not doing that. So Ryan,
I love you.
No, not at all. Like, I just
but he does support the war on terror, because he congratulated Vice for his graduation. So
congratulations, everybody.
Sorry, Ryan. Sorry, Action for Everyone fans.
Yep.
You're goose stepping to the war on terror now.
Jesus Christ.
All right. So speaking of military war on terror, I need to talk about, I gotta talk about, because I just watched it last night. I gotta talk about Black Sight. This was a movie that we weren't initially gonna cover for reasons, but I watched it last night, and y'all, Sophia Banks is legit. Like, this is a name that the director isn't. This is a name that we as action fans and VOD DTV action fans log into our memory, because for those who haven't seen it, it just came out a couple weeks ago. It stars Michelle Monaghan, Jason Clarke, and Jai Courtney. It's essentially one shot without the one shot technique. A terrorist mastermind is brought into this black site that Michelle Monaghan is running. The terrorist mastermind is played by Jason Clarke.
She's of course galvanized by the death of her husband and child, because she's a woman in an action movie. Yes,
right. Because Jordan, you watched it last night too, right?
Yes, I did. Yes.
Yeah.
Michelle Monaghan. That's me. She's outstanding. I always happy to see her. Always wish she was around more.
Yeah, I agree. I absolutely adore her. I mean, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is one of my favorite movies. So anytime I see her, I'm excited. And seeing her do full blown action in this is terrific.
I want her to stay with this. Like, hey, find a home here, Michelle.
Yeah, and So Jason Clark is the big bad. He gets out, and basically it kind of turns into like a military slasher movie.
As yeah, he is a very walk and stalk kind of killer.
Yeah. But what I really noticed is this is a bog standard script, a bog standard concept. And holy fuck, Sophia Banks is so confident and so in control behind the camera of this movie. Just that, you know, we talk about, this is a perfect example, actually, Liam, of not being a script watcher. Because this, the script on this, it ain't no great shakes. It is what it is. But just sitting back and watching the way she confidently moves the camera throughout this thing, especially if you're like me and you watch a lot of DTV stuff that basically just looks like a television show. Mm-hmm. I my jaw was on the floor for most of it. Not, you know, again, the movie itself is good. It's fine, but holy shit, we need to remember her name. She is a direct. I felt like I was watching like a James Nunn movie for the first time, you know, where you're just like, holy shit, who is this director? And why is this so much better than the other shit that I am constantly watching?
Liam, what is that like from a technical standpoint? What is that quality that makes something like that imparts that look of television? Is it a camera rig thing? Is it a lighting package thing? Like, what is that thing where it's like, why do I feel like this is like an episode of a soap opera?
Yeah, I mean, there's an all-encompassing thing where, you know, it could be any one of those.
Right.
But it's generally just lack of time. And that's kind of where, you know, the TV, like per page per day, I remember like talking to Donald Faison on Skylines. He was just like, oh yeah, once we were like really rolling on Scrubs, it was like this insane rate of pages per day. Whereas I think like on bad days for them, it's like 8 pages on a TV wow. show, and a good day for a movie is like 4. Wow. So it's just, and then like, I think soap operas is something like they'll do like, you know, 15. It's like,
yeah.
Cause it's all the lighting is set up. It's all standing sets. So they're just moving through and they do like a take or two and they get all that stuff done. I've heard really, really crazy stuff about Tyler Perry's I have a friend.
The visual outcome of some of Tyler Perry's stuff. Yes, crazy.
Yeah,
crazy.
Yeah. I'm friends with the guy.
That man has way too much money to have those shitty of wigs on people.
I've not really seen much of it, but
the injustice to those women.
Friends and with them. An actor who is he's one of the lead roles on, and he's like, yeah, we just filmed the season. It's like you were gone for 2 weeks. And he's like,
oh
yeah,
my god,
in the can. So yeah, they crank through it, and that is, I think all those things. It's really just about time. So when you have no time, you just have to get the basic setup, which is people's heads talking into camera over shoulders, master. So you kind of like, it's like the master and the two pops. You get the master of what's happening and you get everybody's coverage and you just keep it going. And then at least, you know, you have your story in the can.
Yeah.
And then, so that's the difference is, you know, taking the time to design your shots and come up with stuff extra. I mean, it's kind of, I'm not going to bring up an old movie, but it's it's kind of the difference of it is really just kind of try to kind of care, prep, design and shot selection and then having the ability to execute it on the day to get everything that you need. So I'd say, and that's and now with TV, you know, having much bigger budgets and much bigger schedules, some of the that whole criticism doesn't really hold the same water, right? Because now we have prestige TV, but the old thing where you say this looks like TV, it just basically means it looks like they shot it really quickly and
got it
really cheaply, I think.
And that's the one thing I do also want to bring up about Black Site. And then Jordan, I'll actually, like, I realized I didn't even ask you what you thought of the movie. So it is from Asbury Park, which is a production company that is basically, they have set themselves up to be the Blumhouse of direct-to-video action. That's kind of the idea. $10 to $15 million movies. With high concepts, and you know what they're putting out is Black Site, holy shit, this is a production company that everybody should pay attention to, because it's like you said, Liam, it looks like they had the time to do what they wanted to do to make it look good, because it I think looks head and shoulders above most DTV action movies. But Jordan, what did you think of it?
I have a lot of fun. I love Jai Courtney. What a fucking dirtbag that guy is, like, in any role. Like, even when he's like, even if he wasn't supposed to be a dirtbag, he's still a dirtbag. I just love his vibe.
He does star in our beloved baby throwing Jolt, which,
yeah,
the movie that
Jolt and I wanted. Thank God for that movie. Laverne Cox catching babies in a maternity ward. Yeah, Jai Courtney just being shitty as he always is. Jason Clarke delivering a majority wordless performance, but that guy's really scary looking. Like, he's a handsome looking man who's not like, he's not scary in the sense of like Patrick Bateman handsome scary, where like a good looking to a level that's like, that's a threat. But just like, there's something about the man that can be so innately ominous. Big fan of his, big fan of Michelle Monaghan. I was having a great time. There were points where I was just like, I feel like this could be solved by these service people being better, these mercenaries being better at their jobs. Like, feel like some errors here that were sort of avoidable for somebody who has, you know, I have no tactical training whatsoever, but it felt like there were some easy fixes here. But as far as like working within the constraints of the form that this movie is, I was like, it certainly sets up a sequel. And I was like, great, get it going. Like, I'm ready to follow Abby on more of this mission. So yeah, I hope Michelle Monaghan sticks with this. Like, hey, you can have a work all the time. Like, finally, let us see as much Michelle Monaghan as we are owed.
This is a pretty high level cast for like a so-called DTV action movie. Like, and the thing is, these actors themselves have played all kinds of fields themselves. They've done a very gamut of high profile TV stuff, DTV stuff. So it's actually a really strong. Well, I haven't seen the film, but this reminds me of the setup. Reminds me of it was a film from 2010, I believe, called Unthinkable. Samuel Jackson, Carrie Moss. Sam Jackson plays he's a interrogation expert, basically. He's a torture expert. He's a torture. He's like the Mengele of CIA torture.
Okay.
And yes, there's a high-level British terrorist, Michael Sheen is a terrorist, who he has the information from. And Carrie Ann Moss is the, I guess, the government, the in-between, who has to get the information, but also make sure he doesn't die.
Ah.
So it's a really, really intense, like, more morality play about, you know, how far is he willing to go to get information. But again, it was like a really low profile release. I don't even think it got a theatrical release. I think it was just like straight DVD. But again, it was like a high level actors in a pretty contained. It was all in this one black site. So yeah, like these setups are really, really, I find have a lot of fertile ground for higher level actors to like apply their craft in a more deliverable, more accessible setting. Another one similar is this Good Kill with Ethan Hawke. He plays a drone pilot, a drone pilot in Nevada, doing, you know, blowing up people in the Middle East. Is, you know, so it's literally in a box. And again, there's a lot of so much morality play at night. Yeah, so yeah, these kinds of movies, this is something I definitely got to check out soon, because this definitely sounds in my wheelhouse of, you know, crying myself to sleep for past sins or seeing cool for seeing cool action.
Again, the big reason I wanted to bring it up is just simply because Sophia Banks, I don't want to like oversell the movie, but I cannot oversell how good of a job she does as the director of this movie. Like, she's a name that is going in the book that I will just watch whatever movie and very
rad.
She's probably going to be relegated to DTV action. So I'll be in 3 years, I'll be complaining about why is Sophie, much like I do James Nunn or Jesse V. Sophia Banks not getting her fucking Marvel movie. But
and what's the name of the production syndicate?
Asbury Park.
Okay, yeah, I'm gonna put it out for the guys too. Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, I mean, we've been talking about like you know the set when you go back and watch like Ninja 2, just the production values of those old New Image movies compared to the last decade and where things went, and so having like a Blumhouse of action is something that I've been talking to people about for a while. So it's really exciting to see someone taking that up. And the other thing I wanted to say real quick is that Jai Courtney is a really interesting case of like, just, you know, miscasting. And like, it's nice to see people kind of coming around on him because, you know, I saw him in the Spartacus show and he was good. You know, uh-huh. I think that's where that really is what made his career. He's really good on that with, and then they just kind of put him into some movies that, you know, it didn't seem like it fit. You know, they kind of put him as the hero, but he's a much more likable kind of rake rogue type of guy. And so, you know, just
making Jai Courtney respectable does not help Jai Courtney's screen presence.
Right. Right. So
yeah, he's chew scenery when he's a piece of shit.
Yeah. And then, and you know, so, I mean, I've been said on Twitter how much I don't like Terminator Genisys, and his on Kyle Reese is one of the bigger reasons for that. But I don't even know how much that's his fault, the script, the director, whatever happened there. But, you know, I liked him before that movie, and I've liked him in stuff since. So I think it is just an interesting kind of a, you know, thing to watch about people coming back around and being like, well, it doesn't, just because an actor doesn't work in one particular movie doesn't mean you have to all of a sudden be like on some hate train and say, I hate this guy now.
He had the 1-2 punch of A Good Day to Die Hard and Terminator Genisys. And I will fully admit that 1-2. And I actually, you know, I've said this before. I actually like Genisys, but I hate A Good Day to Die Hard.
Yeah, that movie sucks.
With the white hot fire of a thousand suns.
They had Mary Elizabeth Winstead right there teed up for a next McClane movie, and they fucking didn't do it.
And he felt like they were plugging him into that Sam Worthington bland leading.
Yeah. So bland.
And that's not what he is.
No.
As much as I don't think it's a good movie, Suicide Squad was the first time where I was like, oh,
wait. Yeah, he's great in that.
Yeah. And then it was actually, again, our beloved Jolt. It was Jolt last year where I was like, fuck, am I a Jai Courtney fan now? And then last night watching Blackside, I was like, fuck, I am a Jai Courtney fan, aren't I? Like, but you guys are right. He needs to be like, he has an inherently punchable face.
It's a big face. It's a very big face.
It's a big face.
He has a punchable face and kissable lips. It's really weird.
Yeah. Yeah. He needs to be. And that's where I love him in Jolt, because the first half of Jolt, spoilers for Jolt, I guess.
Oh, yeah. He's such a charmer.
He's such a romantic comedy. Like, it's totally like he's romantic comedy leading man in that movie. And then he's such a fucking dick smack at the end. And that really maximizes what he's good at. And Black Sight maximizes what he's good at, too.
Yeah.
Fucking sucks in the movie.
I also want to say, though, A Good Day to Die Hard is one of the worst directed films I've ever seen in a theater. So I really didn't ever put that at his feet. You know, like we talk about script watching, we talk about directing watching. It is like, I absolutely loathe the way that film is cut. And it has very little to do with the script. Like, I don't know what the script was, but that's not what the script. You're not watching a script at that movie. It is just like the studio being like, take another 15 minutes out. And they're like, where? You know, just where? Take it everywhere. Like the whole thing is just so chopped up and frankly incoherent. And you can tell there's like lines and all this stuff missing. And I would put that, I don't even know if it's the director's fault. It felt like just such studio product coming from a very cynical place. So I never really blamed Jai Courtney for A Good Day to Die Hard.
Him, Worthington, Taylor Kitsch, Joel Kinnaman. Is it all these like bland white guys? They're not bland at all. They're great.
I was going to say, Jai Courtney is anything but bland. Like, and that guy, you hear his personality come through in interviews too. It's like, you are unhinged. You're a crazy Australian. Like, you're fabulous.
Like those guys in particular, those four guys in particular, like, they got the better because we kept trying to make these superstars again, make these movie stars. But they're so much more interesting as like actual character actors and actual actors in general. Like, by the crap. I'm a Kitsch man myself. Taylor Kitsch, Battleship, it's a boy.
Big fan.
He was making a chicken burrito. If they say it three more times, it's really going to work. Keep saying it.
But yeah, again, like we have this kind of breadth and wealth of actors, I think. Again, this is going back to that soup that like movie stars. They're all here. We're just not using them right.
We do have movie stars, but in the sense that movie stars existed before the dissolution of the monoculture as a result of like a digitized world where we stopped experiencing the same things because we could access them separately on smaller platforms. We mm-hmm. don't have movie star. We don't make new movie stars like a Hanks or a Streep or a mm-hmm. Roberts anymore because it's not to the discredit of the current iteration of rising stars. It's because we just don't embrace things in a singular way the way we used to. Media has just changed too much. Like, mm-hmm. so in the sense of there are no movie stars in the way that we conceptualize, like Matt Damon talking about that too. Like he says a lot of stupid shit, but when he was talking about like the difference of how like the movie star generated system where you could put somebody's name on a marquee and that would bring people to a theater to have a common experience, and how home video sales also declining means the death of the mid-budget movie. Like he was making a lot of good points about that. Like we don't make Matt Damon's anymore because there are a billion different people you could prefer across a billion different shows, depending on what your specific niche interests are. So yeah, like in that era, in that way, like we don't make new Beyoncé's, Taylor Swift's, or Rihanna's, like people coming up after them. My mom even knows who Beyoncé is, but she probably doesn't know who Ariana Grande is. And Ariana Grande is one of the biggest stars in entertainment currently. So
Well, it's a new world.
Didn't mention the king, though. You didn't mention the king who has come to Cannes to save the world.
Tom. Well, there's never going to be another Tom Cruise. There wasn't a Tom before Cruise. No. And there's not going to be a Tom after Cruise.
No. And when he expires, I'm just going to go with him. I don't want a world without Tom Cruise.
That's your Heaven's Gate, and I don't blame you.
Anyway, very excited. That's next week's show, right? Top Gun Maverick. Yeah. I'm actually going to see it tomorrow.
Top Gun Maverick next weekend. Theoretically, hopefully, if it all works out, we might have a very special guest for it.
Please tell me it's Glenn Powell. I love him.
No, we're not that big, Jordan.
Glenn Powell's like mom and dad, who are awesome.
This podcast is.
Get Glenn Powell's family on. Like they're so cool. Oh,
we are not. You're Glenn Powell level. The three of us idiots.
I'm fucking trying, man.
To Glenn Powell level. All right. Last thing we're going to talk about. We were going to talk about the George Miller 3000 Years of Longing trailer. I don't think we need to talk about it other than to say it's a new fucking George Miller movie. Everybody wants to watch it. Okay. I finally saw RRR. Look, here's the thing. Movie fucking rules. Movie's amazing. It's unreal. It's awesome. It's incredible. I'm really trying to figure out why this is the one that broke through.
I can explain it to you.
Oh, okay.
And
B, why in Vice, when you saw it weeks ago, you brought this up. Why everybody just kind of wants to give a pass to the blatant nationalism in this movie? Like why they want to throw something like Wolf Warrior 2 under the bus, but they're just like RRR is okay. So those are the things that when I was tweeting last night and I had people all up in my ass, because no matter how much I said the movie rules, the fact that I had criticisms about it was, but Liam, explain to me why this is the one that broke through.
Okay. Straight up don't have the same history with Indian cinema that you guys do. So you know this, but just from.
No, I think that perspective is like, then you're the case for why.
Yeah. Like I've only seen War.
A different level of penetration.
I've only seen War and I liked War, but War still has some of the like stuff that, is funny to the Western thing. It's like the homoeroticism and the dancing that is on a different level, and mm-hmm. it's still going to make people just be like, some people can't get into it. This one to me, like when I really got into the mid part of it, I was like, oh my God, this is like Titanic. You know, that's why, like, it's, if you think about Titanic, it's not that every character in the story is extremely clear. Everything that's happening, the camera is telling you exactly what's happening with extreme clarity and purpose. the characters are kind of like Cal in Titanic is a lot like Ray Stevenson's villain in this. We're talking like they're probably actually relatives if we go back in the canon. We're talking about villains. Do they need to have an arc? And like, no, but the villain needs to be cunning and it needs to be a worthy adversary for your heroes. And so one, the movie starts with a lot of English. It starts, mm-hmm. so it kind of brings everybody in, and it has great villains up front. It's fucking gorgeous looking on a level that I think surpasses most of the, almost anything. It's just insanely, insanely gorgeous. The use of digital effects in it, I think, is better than a lot of the other Indian stuff I've seen just in clips. Like, I think it's, they really sell crowds. They obviously have a ton of extras. So you have this, this fucking crowd fight where he fucking jumps over the fence and fights into it is one of the craziest things I've ever seen. But it's just on a level of like, all those people need to eat lunch. Like there's things like that that make me just go crazy because I'm like, you have to feed everybody in between the takes. And like, it's the stuff why Hollywood films have kind of just like given up on big extra scenes. It a lot because they'll just fill it in with massive visual effects at the end. And they still do have crowd visual effects in this. I'm not saying they don't, but they obviously have like a couple hundred people in some of these shots and they're coordinated in a way that is just really enthralling. But yeah, so the characters in it, like everything's really clear. There's twists, but I found it wasn't like, Michael Bay or Zack Snyder, like there's some Snyder camera moves and stuff, but he's really working on that James Cameron level where it is like, it's not the deepest thing, but it's really wide. The scope is super wide. It's super clear and simple and in a really great way. And so that's why I was like, this is the highest compliment I can give for a historical epic is that it reminds me of that hyper-focus. And that's why people will say like, oh, that Titanic script, it's not that good. It's like, it made $1 billion because it had a really fucking bad villain and you liked the heroes and you loved them and you wanted them to get together. And it was this big, historical tragedy. And this one has these great heroes that you love. It's really a bromance.
Yeah.
And it has a great villain that you really want to see get killed. So I felt like it's just that like absolute purity of this kind of classic blockbuster storytelling. To me, that's why it broke through. And they kind of hold back on some of the crazier stuff until the third act. The third act is real superhero,
yeah,
more Indian cinema.
The third act, like this movie's fucking bonkers. Like it's saying they hold, but you're right, they do hold back until the third act.
They hold back on the like people grabbing motorcycles out of thin air. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
even though the fight in the beginning is crazy, it's still like grounded to an extent that
there's not a man sitting on another man's shoulders being run around a prison yard where one is shooting and the other is acting as like his legs. Like,
right. That if they opened with a scene like that, I think it has less legs for Westerners. That's what I'm trying to say. They kind of, they really guide you in with a universal approach for that first hour, that first 40 minutes before the 40 minutes, the credits of RRR happened. And I had to pause it. It was like, yeah, what is this? So I really feel like it was a brilliant approach to kind of go for the biggest audience possible.
Well, I think also it's timing. It's like life is location, location, location. Like we're prepping for Fast 10. We're at Marvel fatigue for a lot of people. Not me. Keep going. Bring it on. I love it. great. Fabulous. Love the actors. Love it all. But there is, and in the sense of like Twitter being a hub of conversation, like a few strategically like well-followed people found this thing to where it became viral, to where it became disseminated. And it had theatrical showings that people could find in some places. It was accessible in a way that I think people, if you don't go looking for Indian cinema, you don't necessarily know if you can find Indian cinema if you're not like curious about that directly. Suryavanshi just came out, is there early this year or the end of last year? And that is every bit as much of an Indian action film as this one. But it didn't get the jump off that it did because it just didn't have its moment in the sun the way yes. that this did in a viral capacity. And it is doing so many of the things that Indian films specialize in that make them extraordinary and wonderful and feel so pure in that way. But it's just like, yeah, it just fucking caught. And it feels good. It's a movie that feels really good. It's a movie that feels really fun. I feel like here in the States, there's definitely some like American centric, like gawking at the exotic and like the novel of, ooh, look at what they do. That is a bit weird, but is a part of it. But it's not, to me, it's not different than like, hey, have you guys seen The Raid? As if Headshot doesn't exist, as if Meron 2 doesn't exist, as if anything fucking Eco has done doesn't exist. Like, this is just what fucking happens. Like, this happened, this is the story of horror cinema since roughly the end of 2015, the start of 2016 with the arrival of The Babadook, The Witch. It follows Goodnight Mommy, where people started using the term elevated horror, where A24 came in and made a huge cultural sort of touch point out of what IFC Midnight had been doing for years upon years upon years upon years already. Like, the fact of saying that horror developed a social consciousness because of Get Out belies the fact that Jordan Peele,
yeah, you get the Splash Brothers
pool party, that Jordan Peele like pulled so heavily from the Stepford Wives, and that a half century of horror cinema and allegory and metaphor had piped into the Stepford Wives. Like, White Zombie is about like the subjugation of black slaves by like white slave owners, turning them into like work drones. Like, this has been present all the time, but people find shit when they find shit. Like, they just do.
Yeah, I guess only I think that this one specifically was, in some regards, designed to be the breakout for Western American audiences.
It was marketed that way. The way that the trailer has been pushed, and the way it's been like, it's pushed as an event. The way
that's kind of downplaying like how well executed it is.
Oh, it absolutely is. It absolutely is.
Like, it is so well done. I don't know how they do a lot of the fucking shots of the movie. Like, it's mind bending. And then all of a sudden there's a crucifixion scene and a song breaks out and I'm crying. I don't even know why, but I'm just like touched. And it's like the imagery of it. It's an overwhelming movie. It really is. And I felt like I was going to be, overhyped on it too, because I can have that same vibe, but it surpassed my expectations. And it definitely,
you should check out Bahubali on Netflix, the 6-hour two-part epic that the same director S.S. Rajamouli did. Like, that's what this guy does. That's what this guy makes. Like, the story of two brothers warring over a kingdom in, period peace times India. Like, that's what this man does. He's really, really fucking good at it.
And
I was gonna say, Vice, what were you gonna say though? Yeah, go
back to your original other point about so I mentioned this, I mentioned this on Twitter a while ago. I said, I see this comment all the time. Oh man, Marvel could never do this shit. And it's like Jordan, what you mentioned about the this kind of belies the point about how we're kind of exoticizing.
Yeah.
Indian films.
You've talked about this with like people talk like America is the only country that imports movies from abroad and does remakes of them. It's like there are international remakes all over the fucking place.
Yeah, it's a whole ecosystem. But like, I said this tweet a few weeks ago. I said, if you wish that America made movies like RR, we do. And they involve two black guys in a Pontiac Fiero going into space.
100%.
These are fast films. But like, now it's, there's certain levels of storytelling and craft that are different, obviously, but the same.
No, but heart. It's like Avatar. It's not so different to me than Avatar. Like, look at the villains in Avatar. Like, they're
very
like Quatrich is very much Ray Stevenson in this movie. Mm-hmm. The simplicity, the things that people dog about the script. It's like it's not about the script. It's the fact that like there's so much resources and time devoted to this movie that the cinematic moments just kind of like become overwhelming altogether. So yeah, I think it's better than the fast films. I think it is more of on that Cameron Avatar like type of level, because
if you like Dr. R, guys, I would recommend the entire High and Low franchise.
Yeah
but sure. I feel like he hits more up and down than Fast kind of like stays at one level and I get emotional at it, but it doesn't go as high as R&R, which is like, that Titanic vibe that I got from it too.
Well, I, so think, I don't. I think too. I think sincerity factors in heavily into this, which is something that it does seem that Indian cinema does really well is an unselfconscious earnestness. Yeah. And we're so like so much of the prevailing sense of humor in the only monoculture we have left, which is these like superhero size movies here in the States, is really steeped in that Robert Downey Jr. Iron Man kind of sense of humor that the entire MCU has really built itself around, where everybody has to say that's not a thing about like a joke. Like in American movies, the joke of just saying that's not a thing and that brand of like self-aware, self-referential humor, we're above it, we're ironic kind of thing. There's absolutely no trace of that. So even if you're consciously or subconsciously kind of tapped on that, and then you watch something like this that is with abandoned, just pure sincerity, it can feel like a bit of a balm in a way that, because this thing gained enough momentum to be put in front of you in a way that is unique to, I think, the way a lot of Indian cinema does seem to sort of like roil around in the culture. Suddenly it grabbed you and you were aware of this thing that you didn't even know was an option before.
I want to talk about the hard part that people have a hard time talking about, the issue of nationalism. And this kind of speaks to the, I mentioned the exoticism and stuff, you know, like, mm-hmm. All right, this is where it gets sticky because, like, here's like with three white guys and a black guy talking about Indian culture. To that point, there is a very fascinating article by, well, he's not a friend of the show, but he's a friend of mine, I guess you could say.
If you have any articles about this, I would love to read them because I am self-conscious about the way, about very effusive posting about Indian action films because not just this movie. Is a, like, Indian movies are incredible. Indian action movies specialize in propaganda. They're amazing. And there is a constant, I am constantly watching them wondering, gosh, I wonder where there's really good writing or analysis about the tension between Hindu people and Muslim people and nationalism. And like, because I am not qualified to speak on these things, but I would like to know how Indians themselves are speaking on it, because it is a lot of these action movies that dabble in things that are very sticky that we're having conversations about over here in our kinds of movies. But I don't know what it's like in the film economy and the criticism.
Part of the complication is because, again, just the fact that people keep calling these Bollywood movies when the reality
they're
is
not all Bollywood. Regions.
Right. So the regional specificity alone is part of the complexity of talking about this.
Yeah.
I guess long story short is, I was going to say, a good side tangent to this is Patrick Willems. He does a lot of YouTube videos and essays. He did one partner with our friend Siddhant Adlaka about RR. And so they kind of, Siddhant kind of adds some cultural background. So, you know, this one white guy enjoying RR. So if you guys listening, if you check out YouTube, Patrick Willems, he's a good start with this. But so the long and short of that I've read so far is that because this being a Telugu Southern Southeast movie, they don't have, or the racial animus intention going on right now in India is not quite the same there regionally as it is that we've seen in the news. Now, again, this is like just kind of just like broadly speaking, but there's still that nuance that's important there, because as I'm reading comments and articles by Telugu and South Indians who see these criticisms too from their own, from their own other Indian counterparts, other reviewers. They also obviously recognize nationalism and propaganda, but I think an argument against it that I've seen is that the nationalism is specifically about these southern heroes, one of the actors, he's playing the hero, the real life hero Aluri Raju, back in the 1920s. He was fought against the British, and so what in the end of the movie, he's dressed in like a garment that's like one of the a traditional Indian god, but the thing is, the actual guy did that. He specifically, purposely dressed like this religious hero to engender his own mythos and create his own support during the revolution or during the fight against the British Raj. So it's not that the movie is hyping up this nationalist religious fervor. That's actually part of the real history of it too. So this is really nuanced that we, us here, may not understand. So I think that, not that it's getting a pass per se, but like there's more to it than this is obviously nationalistic or is obviously propaganda. Just we there's more to the region, the cultures themselves, and the actual historical figures that require that welcome more investigation. And again, this is like we're putting at the end of the movie, at the end of RR, during the Dance Secret Credits, there's an actual, in the lyrics, in the song, they show various Southeastern Indian heroes of reality who fought against the British, fought against oppression. And it's like an opening like a textbook, like, hey, if you're done with this, go look up this guy, go look at that woman. So again, it's part of the fabric of the film. Like they want us to like delve further into this stuff. And I think in some ways, not be afraid to like question what's going on. As opposed to when I said I wrote by myself, there was a film, I spoke with this before, Yuri, the Surgical Strike, about 2018, I believe, based on a real event, based on a real in the Kashmir region, Indian Special Forces fighting a terrorist, very blatantly. Like, remember in London Is Falling, he goes, go back to Afghanistan?
Yeah.
There's something even harder than that in this movie. He says, tell your friends to, when they get to hell or whatever, when they see the 72 virgins, hold off on the celebration. We're gonna have more coming for them. Like it's like hardcore, like anti-Muslim, like fucking like, and so like that stuff definitely exists. It's definitely a part of the ecosystem of Indian films, but I think it's incumbent on us, and we should be not afraid to like dig deeper. You know, do our own research a little bit and try to find it. This the same way that people kind of say Indian cinema as a whole sees impervious because it's so much of it. No, and again, this movie is to Mike's point about why this one is picking up, it's a perfect entry point to delve into all these really fascinating, really complicated topics, but it's just in a really kind of digestible way, you know, via James Cameron's Titanic.
No better inroad than Titanic.
Well, yeah. I was going to say, like, I just think, you know, as someone who enjoys watching, you know, even Mel Gibson smash British people's brains in and Braveheart, it would be kind of hypocritical for me to come in and be like, hey guys, shame on your nationalistic. Like I'm out here saying I love 13 hours and I'm going to be like, India, I think you could do a little bit more of a nuanced job on your British depiction. I don't give a fuck. Kill Ray Stevenson. No, he's a piece of shit.
Hold on. I loved it. This is my point. This is my fucking point. Like, cause I've just been letting everybody talk about this and I'm the one that like my mentions were.
Yes.
Fire. All right. My point is this. 13 Hours has been shit upon for being nationalistic. Braveheart has been shit upon for being nationalistic. Fucking everybody is just giving RRR a pass. And that's my argument.
People just don't understand that element occurring in geopolitically in India.
British people are bad, Mike. What are you talking about?
Let me make this point for one fucking second. Okay.
Continue.
My point here is that I do not understand why we are not engaging with this the way we do with other movies that are this nationalistic. Vice, your point is absolutely on in terms of this. Like, and I don't know, maybe it is because I've watched a lot more Indian cinema and I've seen the nationalism, but I feel like this movie is getting a pass in a way that any other country, battle at Lake Changjin, for instance, is not getting. And that is what I'm trying to wrap my brain around. And that is where, Liam, I think you're the one that said it. That's where the exoticism comes in. And that's what's bugging me is, oh, look, we've never seen a movie like this before. It's amazing. We're going to ignore everything that we would criticize any other movie for. And that's the problem I'm having. It's not with the movie. Movie fucking rules. Movie's amazing. I loved it. It's my problem with the discourse about the movie. And I just wanted to try and bring that up. Have any of you ever seen Sergei Eisenstein's Alexander Nevsky?
No.
A movie made about a Russian folk hero specifically to gear up Russia to fight Germany in World War II. That's what RRR feels like to me. And Alexander Nevsky is one of the greatest movies ever made. It's incredible. You want to watch what an epic action movie from the 1930s looks like? Watch fucking Alexander Nevsky. Real. There is a giant battle on an actual honest to God frozen lake. No scene. No, like Eisenstein marks these fuckers out and he's like, hey, you know what? If the lake breaks, fuck it. Sorry. You know, my biggest point that I was trying to make is that we are giving a pass to a lot of things in this movie just because it's cool that we wouldn't give to another movie that is cool. Now, Liam, going back to your point of it's James Cameron, it's Titanic. Sure, it's fucking great. Like, give a pass to that, but give a pass to the other shit that you're constantly like harping on. Does that make sense?
I think we don't have an adversarial framing for India and the United States that we have an adversarial framing for China. We don't have a cultural sort of closer one-to-one relationship accessibility as we do with white English speaking nations. Like, I don't know, Australia or the UK, like they're India. Like, I think it is the a sort of exoticism, very otherized framing of like this thing that's so far apart from us that we don't understand. Like, it just feels new and it feels novel and it feels fun. And even if you get senses of, you know, like, oh, maybe that little bit didn't feel right. Like, there seems to be some sort of subjugation of people going on. And I don't know about the hierarchy of who's deemed human in this kind of narrative. If that doesn't register for you as something that's happening a lot in these movies that you watch because you never watch these movies, it's a lot easier to be like, oh, a one-off thing that like maybe had some sticky points. Like, I just don't like, I don't think there's the framing, and I just don't think people are cognizant of this shit. And I frankly don't think most people fucking care. Like, yeah, no. I think most people don't fucking care. And hey, I think people don't know.
Is it good or not? That's what we care about.
Yeah. You know, and, I mean? And it's so over the top and sort of like wonderfully garishly vague that it kind of, I think it's easy to be like, it's like when people watch extreme violence on the order of like the sadness and they say, oh, I can watch that because it doesn't feel real. But then they watch a Serbian film and they're like, that's too much. When as far as like violence for violence goes, those two movies are probably on par, but the things happening in a Serbian film or Cannibal Holocaust as an offsided example feels so much worse because it's like, this shit is actually happening. Did these people die? Versus in the sadness, you can dissociate from that. And I think the bigness allows for dissociation if you do care. And if you don't care, then you don't fucking care.
Yeah. No. And you know, and that makes that, I mean, that does make perfect sense. It does need to be
interrogated. I sit here from a place of saying I find discomfort around talking about Indian cinema because so many of the big movies that I enjoy carry whiffs of this a lot. And I don't know how to unpack it because I am not equipped. And I would like people to tell me how.
I hate the term to be like, I'm just asking, you know, I'm just like, literally, yeah, that's what I'm doing here.
I'm taking the opposite stance of all you guys. I think they should teach this in history class. That's how good this movie is. I don't care.
I would love a fully fleshed out term long discussion on
rewrite history. This is actual history. Great film.
Great film. Like, again, I don't know how many more times I could have made that clear last night. Like, great fucking movie. Watch RRR. It's incredible. Like, I'm fucking, I was fist pumping. Oh, like, my God, it's an amazing fucking movie. I loved it. I have questions.
Do your research, everybody. Follow those breadcrumbs.
Yeah, I guess this is the growing pains, I guess, of us really, like, because in a broader sense, this is like the best possible case. Like, we always say, watch international cinema. And now people are. They're doing it. They're doing it. But of course, like, you know.
Not like that.
But, you know, of course, that we have to have this kind of tension or friction or just discomfort, even at that, of how people are going to digest it, because that's just by the nature of numbers and by the nature of culture, it has to happen too.
Well, and I'll fully admit I got a little bit of bias here because I am a diehard defender and lover of Wu Jing's Wolf Warrior 2. And every time I bring that fucking movie up, people are up in my ass about how nationalistic and propagandistic that fucking movie.
I mean, it's so blatantly propaganda that there's no point in being like, hey, do you know that's propaganda? Like, there's a fucking propaganda like title card at the end. Like, it's like, guys. It's not a between the lines situation.
RRR is just as nationalistic. And those same people that are up in my ass for liking Wolf Warrior 2 are championing how amazing RRR is without interrogating that. And so that's where my, like, I guess bitterness might actually be the right word. That's where.
Oh, yeah.
Because.
I feel it too. I feel the same. Our nemesis, the Twitter Illuminati, Twitter literati. They say the same shit. Like, you know, like these are the kind of people who like just now discovered Gerard Butler is awesome. Like, you know, they'll take all these years like dismissing this kind of stuff. And like when it's time to, oh, this is great. And then like, which again, it's why I point out Patrick Williams' video, because he's one of the people who has taken a step forward, like actually interrogating what's happening in at the very least his own mind, why is he feeling this way? So like, yeah, I think people are, yeah, I guess that it's that growing pain of having to fucking deal with this bullshit, but like people are going to, they're getting to that point.
Well, and definitely Patrick is, like Patrick's amazing. I think everybody knows Pat, but yeah, Patrick with Sedant, because we have talked often on this show that Sedant Adelaka is one of the most brilliant film writers in the world. So, you know, them, watch that video. Definitely.
And then on the same hand though, it's like, about the exoticism in that Sedant isn't the only Indian film journalist in America. We just know him because he's famous that way. Mm-hmm. So like just because what he says about the movie, that's, you don't have to take that as gospel truth either. You know, you gotta, again, there's more to it. It's up to you, the person to look into, or not, you know, you don't have to care. But like if you are one of these people who are like, who do get in your craw about nationalism, then you go to those people or to themselves, like to delve deeper as well. You know, not just like have the one black guy on the podcast be the voice of black people. Oh man, that was a good one. You gotta say that one.
this is also why we had to have Jordan on, right? We gotta cover the demographics.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
I'm a diversity hire.
The Irish boy and the Norwegian boy.
So much
trying to have a discussion about
the width and the breadth of whiteness between Mike and I.
Oh my God. That's a nice movie. The width and the breadth of whiteness. Samuel Jackson.
Playing at a Sundance next year.
Starring Samuel.
No, sorry, me. I'll be
coming from A24. All right. Sam, I think that's a good time to wrap it up. And I know Liam's got a heart out. Jordan, goddamn, yes. We love you. You are amazing. Thank you for joining us today. Where can people find your work?
Check out the Feeling Scene Pod. We post every week, so we're always happening. The Whole Movie Pod, talking about robot cinema, is also posting episodes right now, and that's been a great time. The Ots Tyrion podcast will kick up again soon, so you can find hours and hours of me talking. And get out there and watch U.S. Marshals on Netflix.
Oh, fuck you.
I don't remember anything about that movie.
Watch just my so you guys favorite know, Sam Gerard movie
this is,
on Netflix.
Yeah, Twitter beef where we're just making fun of Chris for having some nuclearly odd takes, I think, in the past. I've had bad takes too, I know. But I was making fun of him and I said, hey, what you're going to say U.S. Marshals is better than The Fugitive. And then Jordan showed up in the mentions and said, yes, correct. It is better. And
accurate.
It was a mind-blowing experience for Mike and I both being like, has the whole world gone crazy? Doesn't anybody give a shit about the rules anymore? We all know The Fugitive's the best one. What are we talking about here?
Snipes one.
Thank you so much for coming on this week. It is
thank you for having
me. We will absolutely get you back on. Honestly, we would probably have you on every week if we could. I never.
She's the Steve Martin of our SNL here. She's just going to be reoccurring host.
Absolutely.
Five timer.
Vice, the master's graduate. Where can people find your work, buddy?
I'm in the Sanctum Sanctorum doing magic spells and shit. Also on Twitter at Vice's Talking Shit. Instagram looking hot. Letterboxd being smart. Yes.
And packing cheeseburgers in your pockets, man.
Yeah. Get a little
Liam O'Donnell, where can people find you? King of Con, you are this year. So where can people find the king?
I'm Liam Odin on Twitter and Instagram. Thank you everyone for all the support. Woo-woo! As of late.
Hold on, wait. I missed the whole thing. What fucking what's his name? He's getting chased on the rooftops. He grabs a cable from the rooftop of the train and he goes onto the train, the top of the train, to escape the Tommy Lee Jones. U.S. Marshals, 5-star cinema. U.S. Marshals,
hamburger stars.
Cinema. Hamburger, big ass, double big Mac cinema. U.S. Marshals, him and him and the next looking R.E.J. Man, see,
no one's saying it's not a good movie.
just, this is my point. This is what ends up happening in these fucking conversations.
Right.
It's like
right.
going all the way back to the 300 conversation where I was like, right. I'm not saying fucking 300 is not a good movie. Like,
no. And then you're like, we were talking about this last week. All of a sudden, yeah. I'm sitting here being like, Return of the Jedi, is it that good? And you're just like, afterwards, I listen to the podcast and I'm like, I feel a little dirty about this, this whole endeavor.
You can find me at Hibachi Justice on Twitter and Letterboxd. You can find the show at A4E Podcast on Twitter. That's the letter A, the number four, the letter E Podcast on Twitter. You're obviously listening to us, so you know that you can find the podcast anywhere your podcast app of choice is found. Next week, we're coming back with Top Gun Maverick, which I gotta tell you, I think I've felt like the last few weeks we've been, especially me in particular, has been a little negative. I am really looking forward to talking about a movie that I could be disappointed, but I think I'm firmly going to just be flipping shit.
I just can't believe it hasn't come out already. There've already been like three Top Gun news cycles. I can't believe it is not out already.
So I'm going to be looking forward to just going all in on a movie. So everybody listening, thank you very much. We love you all. Love you, boys. Love you, Jordan. Let's do this again next week.
Yeah. All right, everybody.